You are listening to the Frilla Bros Tech Podcast, episode 91, Bad Ideas.
Episode 91 of the Frilla Bros Tech Podcast. Today is June the 23rd, 2013. I am the echoey Matthew Dean Furlow, and this is my super brother, James Furlow.
Yeah, dude, I finally saw the movie. It is awesome. Bought the soundtrack. I've been listening to it, and I almost went again to see it this afternoon.
Really?
But I was a little slow on pulling the trigger. Because I didn't look to see what movie times were until it was like, oh, it's starting right now. Never mind.
So you were a fan of The Man of Steel.
I was. Okay, spoiler alert. Fast forward like 5 minutes if you don't want to hear about it. The complaint in the previous Superman Returns, or just on it, you know, it was like not enough action. You know, it was just really slow.
Right.
So they solved that problem with this one.
Mm-hmm.
I also feel like it could have easily been two or three movies. And, you know, so there were, I'll admit it, there were definitely some rushed parts about it. But, you know, I know the character, so it's not like what was his development? You know, I know.
Yeah.
But it's good. It's okay. You don't have to love it.
I was kind of disappointed, and mostly because the characters were so incredibly linear, and the story was so incredibly linear, and there was like no character development or character arc. Lois Lane.
You could tell that they tried, but
there was so much that they had to do, and the only super creative thing that they did with this movie was they rearrange the order in which the major villain comes. So instead of Lex being the first villain, it was Zod. Like that was it. I don't know. I guess I was really hoping for something more. And you can tell that like in the end the studios were like, no, it's gotta be Superman, it's gotta be vanilla Superman with darker colors and more action. That's it.
Well, again, my hope is, and this is why I'm going to tell everyone to go watch it, is that it is actually successful and that they do like a Batman thing where it's like, yeah, well, this was the Superman Begins, whatever. Yeah, it's not as good as Batman Begins, whatever.
Which, you know, I'll be honest,
sets them up for like, okay, he's here, everyone's established, we tease the whole Lex Luthor, you know, strong businessman, you know, evil villain thing. Let's let that and the mind games play out on that one and go with the character then.
You know, that's
who is
true.
Clark Kent, how does he balance all of this?
Yeah, that's true. And to be totally honest, the first time I saw Batman Begins, I thought it was a really stupid movie. And then I watched it again, and I thought it was a really dumb movie. Then I watched it again, and I thought it was a dumb movie. And then I watched it again, and I thought it was an alright movie. And now I watch it all the time because I think it's a great movie. So sometimes I take a little bit longer to warm up to movies, these types of movies, than most people. Well, what do you mean?
I was like that with Napoleon Dynamite.
Yeah.
The first time I saw that, I was like, this is the stupidest movie ever. Why would anyone? Why? I don't get it. And then I watched it a second time and went, okay, I get it.
Yeah. That was closely related to my experience with Zoolander. I thought it was a stupid movie. And then like 3 weeks later, I found myself still constantly quoting it. I was like, maybe it wasn't a terrible movie.
That is a quotable movie.
Oh, man, it really is. Wow, what the heck? What's going on with Superman? Domestic or foreign, it's only pulled in $73 million. Weird. Wonder why that is. Maybe they haven't done a wide release internationally. Because, I mean, like, what?
That would be kind of weird, given all the advertising they did. But
I know. Yeah. Well, because if you look at Iron Man 3, I think it's all can just Google this stuff now, or Google it basically, and it comes up. Iron Man 3 has pulled in $804 million foreignly and $403 million domestically. So, I mean, it's pulled in, most of its money's coming from foreign areas. And so it's pulled in $1.2 billion and was an estimated production budget of $200 million. What the heck?
That's a pretty good return.
Yeah, no wonder they're going to make another one. But don't worry, Iron Man will be back. Yeah, I believe it. So anyways,
congratulations for coming out of the closet, by the way. Or let's just say the storage room, perhaps. I've been working on that one all week.
You know what? I'm proud of you for holding on to that one, because I didn't see that coming at all. That was good. Yes, I am. If you can tell by the echo, I'm in a new room. It has a table, a computer, a giant 27-inch screen, some speakers, keyboard, mouse, and nothing else.
Internet, you're good.
Internet. It's literally all I need. Don't have a bed. I don't actually know what my plan is for sleeping tonight.
Wait, so you're sleeping on the floor? You don't even have a mattress?
Yeah. I got blankets. It's pretty close, right? You know,
you're good. You know, there was a long time where I didn't sleep on a bed either. I had one. It was in my room. I just didn't go into my room.
That's what I keep telling everybody. I'm going all Steve Jobs on this thing, man. I'm waiting until I figure out exactly what I want before I commit to anything. this is my plan. People may keep making fun of me for it. But anyway, so we're not here to talk about Iron Man and my living situation all week. We are here to talk about technology, the continuing corporate opera, or the soap opera of corporations' dealings back and forth, the people working for them, their marketing campaigns, and the technology they're developing. Before we get into the heart of the show, James has got a short disclosure he's got to throw our way. Ironically, he'll do it this week and not last week.
I got it in there eventually. I work for HP, but I do not represent HP or any of HP's opinions.
Nice. That is true. That is as true last week as it was last week.
Hopefully for many weeks to come.
It's true. So if you want to follow us on throughout the week, all sorts of our cool pictures and funny stuff, you can go our main hub of internet, of our internet personalities, I suppose, is probably the Twitter. At least for me, that's true. Everything kind of flows through that. First and foremost, my Twitter handle is at Matthew D. Furlow.
And I am at James Furlow. And again, I am experimenting with a Tumblr blog, jamesfurlow.tumblr.com, on like posting articles and thoughts there.
Nice.
Which I don't have copied over to Twitter or something. I don't know. I haven't figured out how to do all that yet.
Yeah. So
Let me rephrase it. I know how to do it. I just haven't figured out like the directions I want information to flow. I just want to clarify.
Right. And more and more of you are...
If this, then that is an awesome tool.
It really is. If you don't know what if this, then that is, Google it, because it's not just a logic structure in programming. It's an awesome service that allows you to do all sorts of crazy, wacky stuff. It's really powerful. I don't use it enough, to be honest. But what I was going to say is also more and more of you are finding me for sure. I don't know if they're finding you on the Instagram, but feel free to check that out and see all the photographias and Facebook. I'll probably say yes unless you're like obviously a fake profile trying to get me to watch your videos, which I've been getting more of those lately. And as I think I've mentioned before. But, yeah, so check out our social network. And it's more than just tech. It's our whole lives, man. It's partying and fun and commentary and general thoughts. And mostly, I would say probably the one thing that it really is kind of an exception for me is that I don't talk politics online because for whatever reason, man, that's a terrible idea. Talk about anything else, not politics. But anyways, so that's the deal. Yo.
Cool.
So
I'll kick this off with let's see here. We've got 7 days left. January, February, March, April, May.
Oh, no. Oh, shoot. I forgot.
We have T-minus 7 days until the good old Google Reader is no more. So, what are you doing with your feeds? I might have an answer.
I don't know.
I got an answer. You're going to do two things. Number one, export it to, like, document is and just, like, hold on to that for dear sake. It may even make sense if you can somehow get it in, like, a CSV for, Excel, where you can have, like, the name of the feed and then the feed itself. Maybe even another one where you have it in categories. I don't know. That's kind of my intention, is to do at least those things.
Yeah.
And then while you're at it, move all your feeds over to Feedly. They appear to be the current winner, leading runner thing. Because what they've done is created Feedly Cloud. Essentially, they figured out, finally, how to host it all themselves, because they used to be dependent on Google Reader, and they were just, another layer on top of that. And Feedly Cloud, which means two things. Number one, which I think is cool, is you can just visit their website and read your feeds. You don't need a special plugin anymore in order to use it, which is really nice. And number two, they have an API that other services can hook into. And, and so pretty much be exactly what it used to be for, these other services. Right. So far they've integrated one of which that I use, which is Reader on my Mac. And then I'm hoping Flipboard gets on board with them. But I think they're the ones. And their iPhone app isn't bad. Actually, I've been using it the last couple days, just kind of, get another feel for it. And it's different, obviously, but it works. So I think those are the guys who are going to win. They got a lot of momentum and they're doing a good job writing it. I know that Dig is like, oh, we're coming out with something, but it's like, dude,
yeah, it's too late, man.
People are already migrating and they're not going to take a risk of their feeds as unproven. No way. I might do both, right? I'll sign up for this. I'll probably sign up for Dig. I'll try a couple of the others out, but if I had to guess, they're getting it. I don't know how they're going to make any money, but they're the ones.
Yeah. This is important to me because when it comes to getting news and stuff, I'm no longer allowed to use Reddit at work. My boss doesn't actually know what Reddit is. All he knows is that our internet was going really slow, and when he talked to the dude that does all of our internet and they kind of observed where all of our traffic was going, the two biggest draws of our bandwidth for our entire company was Pandora and Reddit. So he assumes that Reddit is some sort of a streaming service, because evidently I was pulling as much bandwidth using Reddit just at work as I was listening to music on Pandora. So he was like, yeah, don't do that anymore. I'm like, okay. Don't figure out what it is, because that'll indicate how much time I spend on it some days. So, yeah. Which means I'm completely cut off from the Reddit stream of news, so I'm going to have to go back to I'm going to have to get my news from other sources. And
you figure it out. You get a balance there.
Yeah. Well, actually, the easiest solution is just to turn on my turn off Wi-Fi on my phone, and which I will do. Already am doing. I have the attention span of a gnat. That's the real problem. I just have such a short attention span that it's like I can work really good for about 15 minutes, then I need about 15 minutes of distraction and do as much work as the other engineers do in 15 minutes as they do in 3 hours. So it's like, it's not too bad, but
I was reading this cool article on Lifehacker. This is off subject, but it's Lifehacker and it's awesome. So we'll share this. This light is just, I look a little better. Article on Lifehacker that was talking about how, you know, where did the 8-hour workday come from and what's the purpose behind it. And what was super fascinating is it had to do with the Industrial Revolution and, you know, trying to get the machine 24/7 because that was the most profitable that they could be. And for a really long time, it was they were like 10 or 12 hour shifts was the idea that they had. And this you know, workforce guru dude wrote a paper that was like, actually the 8-hour workday would be perfect for factories because you have 8 hours of work, 8 hours of, you know, play, and then 8 hours of sleep. And you just do three shifts and, you know, all the numbers work out. And, and he wrote that a while ago. A few years later, Henry Ford was actually the first one to implement it. And get this, he cut everyone's hours in half and paid them twice as much. Or, you know, or he cut them by 2 hours. I'm sorry, not by half. So, you know, instead of getting paid like $10 an hour, it wasn't this, you know, it's probably 10 cents an hour for, you know, to work 10 hours during the day. He said, well, you're only going to work 8 hours, but I'm going to pay you 20 cents an hour.
Oh, man.
So significant.
I can say, so what you're saying is I'm going to get a raise and have to work less? Deal.
Yeah. And they were already like massively profitable. And they said that because of that, they increased employee productivity and happiness and actually over doubled in profitability in like a year. It was one of those, so it's kind of like you go, okay, employees are here and we're profitable. Okay. You know, that's hard to do that. And so obviously everyone else was like, okay, we're switching.
Right.
And so that was how the 8-hour workday evolved. And if you worked in a factory, it still made sense. And they were talking about how we are now in a more service oriented economy. And I would argue that you and I are in the service type of stuff where not working on a factory, I'm doing knowledge worker. Maybe no more knowledge worker is the right term.
Right.
And so they said it's time to think less about the machine cycles and the factory cycle and more like what are our, you know, and attention and those kind of cycles. And so what they found was that human beings can really focus well for like 60 to 90 minutes. And so you are good. And then it's like you very quickly go down the hill, and even if you want to extra time, they're like, you're actually better off the 20-minute to half-hour break and, like, do nothing, either or go play, you know what I mean? Just, like, literally don't do work anymore, and then come back. And so that what they were saying was to figure out, so instead of thinking of your day in terms of an 8-hour marathon, think of it in terms of 90-minute chunk. Set it up where you go, okay, what are the five projects that I can do in about 90, you know, 60 to 90 minutes today? And then just do those. And then once you finish that, you take a break and, you know, and don't worry about it. So they're like, yeah, technically, you might work less hours, but you're going to be more productive and you'll be happier. And
it's amazing how there are some tasks that or most tasks, most work that I do, that's absolutely true. I can go about 60 minutes. And then there are some tasks where it's like, I feel like I can just go for like 5 hours. Like, especially when I get into a writing mood, I can just go nonstop. But I've always wondered if it's just a feeling that I can go nonstop. And I wish that there was a way that wasn't, I mean, I'm not enough of a computational, you know, statistics guy to actually do this, but I wish I could actually look at the writing that I do, keep track of like how big a chunk of time that I do it in, and compare that to the quality of the writing. Because I've always theorized, like, I can write 10, 15 pages in a 5-hour chunk and just like do it, just like mind pour out and just do a ton of work of writing, but my fear has always been that although I was very productive, that was actually the least interesting chunk of writing that I did. Whereas it was the stuff there I only really got a page out because I only really worked for an hour. That was a great page compared to the, you know, 15 pages or 30 page equivalent in a paperback. So I don't know. It's interesting to think about. But
yeah. So anyways, that has nothing to do with Feedly.
That's apropos of well, yeah. Except that's how I'll be spending my breaks, so
yeah. There you go.
Cool.
A half hour, catching up on your feeds every 90 minutes.
So, speaking of guys with split attention spans, Elon Musk has talked about his new supercharge stations, and they're doing a cool little demonstration because they really want to, biggest problem. His goal is and always has been to reduce all of the issues with electric cars to all the resistance to nothing, so that there's no reason to not get one. And, the cost is obviously a big one, but every generation of car that comes out is a major improvement, and it costs less, and they're ridiculously awesome looking cars. And so it's just, it's a very, he's doing a lot, but one of the big ones is obviously still the charging is an issue and the distance. So these supercharge stations, he actually wants to recoin them, which, good job, Elon. You coined them 3 months ago, and you already want to recoin them as something different. What the heck? But you are completely in charge of this. Like, why would you do that? One of the things that they want to do is they want to build a machine that will basically pop your battery out and put a new one in, like a Game Boy. And it's pretty cool because is basically they kind of built this all in without telling anybody. But I guess the batteries, what happens when they like actually bolt the batteries in with the car, they have these nuts that come underneath, they bolt them in, they've got tools that basically put the battery on the bottom of the drivetrain. And so this new system, they basically put that part of the factory that installs the battery just onto an underground compartment. So you drive over it, all the same sensors that locate where the nuts are in the factory, all the same robotic tools that would remove and install a battery are built underneath this little bay, and they pull the battery out and put a new one in. It takes about 90 seconds. They're going to start installing these into the supercharge stations so that when you go there, you can swap out your battery or you can charge. And so the deal is free, and is free, and it will continue to be free. But it takes like 30 minutes. You can get your car charged, 30 minutes, 200 miles. Or for a small fee, you basically wait in line until you drive over one of these bays, 90 seconds. They pop a new battery in, you're good to go for another chunk of distance. So he said basically...
Maybe not new, but charged at least.
Charged, yeah, thank you. So his argument is now you have to choose between, as a customer, you have a choice between free and convenience. Obviously the goal is to get to the cross-ex of both, but for now, it's a pretty good deal. And especially if you consider, even if it's a substantial fee of, like 20 or 30 bucks... compared to a gas tank, that's not necessarily a deal breaker. But the part about it was they do this demonstration where they basically had this dude in an Audi drive into a gas station and fill the tank completely up. And they played that film, they streamed that film on one screen while they had the Tesla come in and get its battery swapped just to show how much faster it was to get a new battery than compared to gas. And the best part is he drives off and Elon goes, that was awesome. That was really a great thing. But we want to give the gas car a little more of a chance. So while we're waiting for it to finish, we're going to bring another Tesla out. He did another Tesla swap. It was just like, oh, that was just cruel, man. That was just cruel.
That's just like, that's that classic, Jobsian showmanship that we talk about where you get that surprise. We're going to compare these two. Oh, yeah, it's actually twice as fast, not just a little bit faster.
Yeah.
And, and the way that he sets it up. Is that really loud?
I can hear it. I don't know what it is, though.
It's a train.
Oh.
But I just, classic showmanship where he's like, oh, it's actually twice as fast. Let's do another.
There are days where it's shocking to me to think that he and Steve Jobs weren't friends, because there's just so clearly just in how they build their product, how they show their product, how he does shows, how he talks about the future. He's just so Jobs. Yeah, that Jobsian describes Elon Musk so well in just, I mean, how he does it and how he goes about it. It's pretty amazing. But the other thing I wanted to mention kind of in conjunction with this is Nissan has announced that they're going to enter an electric car into the Le Mans endurance race, which is a pretty big deal. It'll be the first one to do it. And everybody was like, yeah, but it's an endurance race. It's a distance race. Like, how are you going to keep an electric car going? And Nissan was like, we're going to pop the batteries in and out. Just replace it with recharged batteries like it was a full fuel tank. So this whole idea, and this was something that was really not necessarily pioneered. What?
How does it, what is the race?
The Le Mans?
Yeah, do you know much about it?
Let me Google it so I don't... It's a 24-hour of Le Mans. It's let's see here. Come on. Wikipedia. How is it that Wikipedia wasn't my first? There we go. It's the... is the world's oldest active sports car race and endurance racing, held annually since 1923 near the town of Le Mans, France. I knew it was in France. Commonly known as the Grand Prix of Endurance, and if race teams have to balance speed against their car's ability to run for 24 hours without sustaining mechanical damage to the car and managing the car's consumables, primarily fuels, tires, braking, and materials, the endurance of the driver is likewise tested, as drivers frequently spend stints of over 2 hours behind the wheel before stopping in the pit, allowing a relief driver to take over drive duties. Drivers then grab food and rest in the can before returning to drive another stint. Today, it is mandated that three drivers share each competing vehicle. Yeah, so I knew, I was going to say, I'm glad I looked that up because I was going to butcher it. I knew it was a really, really tough race but in France, but yeah, it's huge. And all of the major car companies put cars into it, and, you know, it's a huge deal. So this is pretty exciting, and this is all stuff that was really, like, pioneered, and it was a concept that was... It wasn't necessarily new or anything, but it was the first time it gained real public notoriety was that one TED Talk where the dude basically was like, I can't remember the guy's name now, but he basically came out and was like, I had this kind of idea kicking around for making electric cars where you didn't charge them, you just swapped the batteries out, and you did it in an automatic changing bay, and he was like, I just kind of had this idea kicking around, and I've been sharing it with a few people, and somebody finally stepped up to him and said, you know, this is actually a great idea. I mean, it fixes the problem with electric cars. You could change the world if you were to do this. And the guy was like, yeah, I guess. And the guy was like, no, I don't think you understand. Like, why wouldn't you spend your life doing that? Why wouldn't you make this your goal to pioneer this technology? You can change the course of humanity by getting us off, like, combustible fuels in our cars. And the guy was like, you know what, that's a good point. I think I'm going to do that. And teamed up with a couple of companies, Japanese companies, to start building the cars. And it was a big, you know, they were going to start in Israel doing all this stuff. So it's pretty cool. To me, that was like, there's two obvious solutions with electric cars. There's the one is the swappable battery. And the second is the electric drivetrain with the hybrid being a generator, whether it's a hydrogen generator or a gas power generator, right, that powers the electric motor. So you move more and more over to purely electric with a gas, with simply a battery. And as you move away from different fuels, and that's how you deal with range. I mean, those are the only two real solutions. And it's awesome to see Tesla basically going, like, we've got both of these and we're going to do it. And, you know, woohoo, it's awesome. So I don't know. I'm excited. I am excited. And Nissan's going to dump a bunch of money into doing this and doing it really, really, really quickly. So should be fun.
So the Nissan Leaf, they say, is like the best-selling all-electric car. When are you getting your Leaf?
What? No. They claim that it's the best-selling all-electric car.
It's the world's best-selling all. Sold 65,000. They're little hatchbacks.
They only sold 65,000? Oh, my goodness.
Well, you know, that's all it takes to be the best.
I know. Well, no, it's a stupid car. It's not a stupid car. It's actually, it's funny. That is the drivetrain that it uses is the exact drivetrain that I just described. The problem is that they didn't put a very powerful electric motor in it. They didn't put a very good generator in it, and they put an entire incredibly small battery pack in it. So it's more of a hybrid than anything. It's has all the performance of a hybrid, but it's got a really good drivetrain in it. And it's just shocking to me that it costs as much as it does. But the problem is that it's like, you know, they've got a full-blown electric motor, a full-blown combustion motor, and a battery pack, and a gas tank. I mean, it's not a very difficult system to wrap your head around what they're doing, but it is kind of a challenge to actually build it. I don't understand why they don't do it with trucks, though, because the thing with a truck is that you could put a really great, you can get all the torque and power of an electric motor, which is way better and
but
way
more.
That's
how trains work, right?
Yeah, nowadays. Yeah, actually. And get these super powerful trucks, and then you could put a little tiny motor in it that's really efficient because it just runs at one, you know, speed until it charges the batteries up. And basically, even though the little gas generator couldn't deliver peak energies, it wouldn't need to. All it would need to do is charge the battery at a continuous rate. So you could actually build a smaller engine that's driving the electric motor, and you could build a way more efficient system. I don't understand why they go with the Nissan Leaf other than the truck, but except that I think that their fear is that you literally wouldn't be able to sell them because, you know, truck drivers don't want to drive no hybrid, you know, cars. And, which I think is stupid. I think that's the only reason why they go that way. I've never read anything that would suggest that there's a real hang-up there. Because everybody agrees that the performance of an electric truck would way outperform a combustion truck. And so it's really only a range issue, which I think you could easily take care of with this. And then all of a sudden now it's just a cost. But if it costs less over time and it's got better performance, I think you could easily get people to come around and paying a little bit more for their trucks.
Well, yeah, at least get the owners and investors on board.
Right.
And they'll go, I don't care. If you don't want to drive it, you can drive for someone else.
Right, exactly. So I don't know. I guess I think it's a matter of time at this point, and it's cool to see all these things moving along quickly. But, oh, I get it.